Keith, when we last talked, you and your band had just started recording Nine in between tour dates. Would you tell me about the rest of that journey creating your first independently produced album?
Well, it certainly turned out to be a longer journey than I initially anticipated when we spoke. It was one of those things where, you know, one of the beauties of doing it on our own was that nobody was forcing us to finish it, you know, or release it before it was finished. One of the bad parts was nobody was cracking the whip to make us finish it. And as artists can very often be, we are our own worst critics. And so we found ourselves, you know, writing and rewriting and re-recording things. And eventually then we put the foot down and went, all right, we have to pick a day. And we managed to get it finished. And now we're very happy that we did put time in, because I think lyrically and melodically it shows the extra time we did put in. But it was just, you know, everything was brand new. It was like having your first child, where you really, everybody's telling you what to do, but you're trying to do it your way. And, you know, so you fall into the potholes and you climb the mountains till you get to the end of the process. But overall, it worked out great in the end.
Other than perfectionism, which I've yet to meet a musician that didn't say, oh, I wish I could do that better, what was one of the biggest potholes that you and the Dubs fell into creating Nine?
Well, one of the biggest ones, which we should have seen coming and we didn't, was that because we tour so much and because that's our income, we had to keep touring. And that meant that when we were off, our producer wasn't necessarily available. And so a lot of times we would come off the road and say, okay, we're ready. We want to do a couple of weeks in the studio, and he wouldn't be available. So we ended up having to find other places to track, and it meant we widened the family a lot and got a lot more people involved. But ultimately it worked out that, you know, we were able to get it done. But these were problems that, you know, you normally don't have when you just hire a producer for, you know, a three-month project and he makes himself available. Tim Boland, our longtime producer, had to take other jobs because we would be gone for a month on the road and stuff like that. So that was, the logistics were really the hardest part.
That was the hardest part. But what would stand out in your mind as one of the absolute best experiences you had in the creation of Nine?
I think when we realized we had the material and the material was as strong as it was, that was a huge relief more than anything else, because you never know when you start a project if it is or not. But as always, for me, the biggest relief was doing final mixes, because when you get to final mixes, songs are done, you get to hear them as they're going to be, and you remember where they started from, and you're usually amazed that they ended up where they ended up. But that's always it's a massive, massive celebratory relief time when you suddenly get to listen to the final mixes and realize you pulled it off.
What works for you as a self-critical musician who always says you're trying to improve? How do you get to that point where, okay, that's it?
You know, I'm not sure that you ever really do. I think you have to put that time limit on it. And we basically really shut ourselves down and went, this is it. Make your last comments and forever live by them or die by them. So everybody did, and we threw in our last comments. But inevitably, when the final mixes were done, we still had, oh, I wish I'd made the snare drum a little louder there. I wish I'd maybe, you know, had a bigger vocal on that one there. But you tell yourself, that's it. You know, I imagine it's similar to sending a kid off to college. You know, you try to prep them as best you can, but once they leave and shut the door behind them, that's it. It's happening.
Let's talk about what's happened with the that's it part of this, because you have some great songs on Nine. Would you tell me the story about creating some of these selections? I personally really like Seeds of Sorrow, but this is up to you.
Yeah, no, anyone you want. Seeds of Sorrow was one of those songs that I'm really happy we had time, because we had the music written for almost everything way, way early on. And usually that's what we do. If it's a song that I write from top to bottom, then usually I'll have a melody idea and I may have a lyric idea. Whereas when it's music written by the band, then I've got the music before I ever get the idea about what it's going to be. And I try to let the music tell me what it's about. So what that involves is playing it over and over again in lots of different situations, you know, especially when you're in your subconscious, so like going to sleep with the song on repeat in my ears, or literally going, you know, walking or working out or just in the van or the bus or a plane, and just literally letting it play over and over again. And ideas came to me and I began to write lyrics, but none of them were exactly what I wanted, and I would sing them out loud to the band, and everyone would, yeah, I really like that line, and I might save that one word, but the actual line, throw away your seeds of sorrow, when it hit me, what I loved about it was the fact that I felt like I'd heard it before. I felt like it was an actual well-known Irish ballad type thing, and that's kind of what you're going for when you do something like this. You want it to be brand new, and you want it to be totally original, but if it has a bit of a lived-in feeling already, then there's a chance that you've nailed something that will go into the psyche of everybody that hears it.
Come in, are you lonely, drunk in your despair? The cloud that is descending, the battle scars you wear.
So I began to fill out from that line, and you know, the line obviously was saying, you know, no more sadness here, come on, let's move on, let's get over this. And so I was able to write the rest of the song around that, and then the minute we played it live, the first time we ever played it, we sang the chorus, and by the second time around, we got to the chorus again, we saw people mouthing the lyric, like as though they thought they'd heard it before as well. So, you know, the beauty of it is it seems to have worked. The bad news would be if I actually find out they heard it before. That wouldn't be so good, but yeah, so that was one that, you know, it took a long time for it to finally hit me. But when it did, I felt like, wow, I'm glad I waited for this. I'm glad I didn't, you know, force lyrics onto this song initially and waited for something to come into my mind that flowed the way it flows.
It feels familiar because it feels like you're saying, don't take life too seriously. And I feel that way also when I hear you sing We the Mighty.
Yeah, and We the Mighty is an even kind of stranger one, because We the Mighty is sort of like a theme that I play with all the time about people, you know, sort of being more confident in themselves and sort of, you know, just, you know, I guess lighten up a little bit, but also, you know, be proud, stand up and be proud. And whatever it is you're doing, it's you and it's, you know, you're one of a kind, and get it out there.
The same old story, just a different generation. But traveling people, a familiar situation. We work so hard, if we can get a job, we know the end of days.
And then it sort of morphed into a song about emigration as well, because when we all arrived out to America all those years ago, it was, you know, what we were greeted with was basically Irish pubs and St. Patrick's Day. And it was very foreign to us because we never celebrated St. Patrick's Day as a party day. It was always a religious day in Ireland. So to see all the shamrocks and the leprechauns and the corned beef and cabbage and, you know, certain things that were a little distressing because it seemed cheesy. You know what I mean? It was kind of our idea of, like, stereotyping us. And then we found out that that's just part of the kind of commercial world that is Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, Christmas, you know, it's just how it's marketed here, but that the people themselves, just, it's a fun day. It's a day for them to get out and have a laugh, and they're very fond of anything Irish that day, and it's become a very successful commercial day for us as well. So I don't knock it, but I wanted to tell the next generation of immigrants, don't worry, that's not what this is when you get here. There's plenty of us here. We've already paved the way. This is a great country to be in, and you will be treated as a welcome guest. And, you know, you won't be immediately asked to dress in a green outfit and put on a big hat and start looking for a pot of gold. So that's why the lyric is, you know, call them up, tell them we're all coming over. There'll be no shamrocks. There'll be no four-leaf clovers. You know, this will just be a great place for you to start again and start your life in the States and not to worry about stereotype ideas you may have of what it goes on here.
There will be a lot of audiences waiting to welcome you as you come over for your St. Patty's Day tour. How's that going so far?
It's going great. We started in a very strange way in Alaska. We started at the very top of your country, and we had 10 amazing days up there that were just phenomenally well attended, and it's a great place to go because not a lot of bands go there, so you get a great welcome on top of the fact that they're glad. You know, maybe for you as a band individually, I think they're glad to have anybody. So it meant that we had great shows in really extreme weather, which added a whole craziness. We also shot a video while we were up there for We the Mighty, which will hopefully be coming out before the end of the month. And then we came back down and started working our way through the lower 48 now, and we're doing the Northwest. We're doing Colorado and the Rockies this week, and then we head into a crazy jumping all over the place St. Paddy's Day week, which will be the whole, you know, we'll be in Texas one day, Salt Lake the next day, L.A. the next day, San Diego. You know, it's kind of going all over the place, but that's how it always is at this time of the year. And then we'll have about 3 days off, and then we go straight to Europe, and we start our European run starting out in Ireland. So it'll go pretty much flat out until the middle of April, and then we'll get a chance to take a breather and see how it's going.
What can our Anaheim audience expect when you get down here on the 14th?
Well, you know, obviously, L.A. and Orange County, these are the areas the band started in, so it has a huge special place in our heart, always has had, and the Grove's a great venue, and we've got great bands. We've dipped into our past again, and we've got Brother, who was a band that played at my bar back in the early 90s when the band started. They were one of the bands that played with us, and so they've kind of regrouped in the last few years, and we found each other again, and so they're going to be there. Also a great local band called the Humble Hooligans. So we really handpicked the night to give it a very world music, definitely with a Celtic edge, but a more worldly than just having the same style of music all night long. You'll get a kick out of the Humble Hooligans, and you'll love what Brother do. There's just as an Aboriginal, Celtic, Scottish blend in there, and we love the guys. We've done a lot of shows with them this year, and it's just a perfect match for us. And then we're bringing it, you know, like we hopefully always do. We've got about 6 songs from the new album, but we've got lots of songs from the Irish album, and we've got, you know, basically represent every record on the thing, but definitely giving it a very heavy Celtic slant for this time of the year. So you'll definitely get a full night of music.
That's Keith Roberts, co-founder and lead singer of the Young Dubliners rock band. As Keith said, the Young Dubliners are coming to Anaheim next week as part of their St. Paddy's Day tour and playing at the Grove in Anaheim next Friday evening, March 14th at 8. You'll find more information on their website, youngdubliners.com. That's youngdubliners.com. And this is Over Coffee with Dot Cannon, back in just a moment with more on LancerRadio.org. We're Lancer Radio, streaming live on www.lancerradio.org, and you're with Over Coffee with Dot Cannon on this Thursday afternoon. Not only is it just about spring break here, it's almost St. Patrick's Day. And the Young Dubliners are going to be playing at the Grove in Anaheim next week as part of their St. Paddy's Day tour. And they are, in all probability, going to be playing some of the songs they've played on their just-released 9th album, their first independently produced studio album of the 9. I had the opportunity earlier this week to talk to Young Dubliners lead singer and co-founder, Keith Roberts, about some of the songs on this new album. I liked Rain, and that's a totally different sound from the others we were discussing.
Yeah, Rain is one of the ones that I'll be most proud of, probably, you know, as time goes on, because, again, that was music that was predominantly written by our drummer, Dave. He always has a song or two to come in with, and on Saints and Sinners, he brought me the music for How You Girls, was such a different song and ended up being such a fun song. I'm not sure where he thought I was going to go with that lyrically and melodically, but, you know, it's one of my favorite tunes as well. But when he brought me this one, when he came up with the idea for Rain, I realized this was going to be a much heavier subject matter. And I took a long time. I wrote melodies. I had pretty much a melody stuck in my head that was going to be the melody, but I wasn't 100% thrilled with it. And then on one of my walks, which is one of my sort of main songwriting tools, is I take long walks in the morning, just me and my little beagle, and we walk and I listen to the music over and over in my head. And for some reason, whatever that process is of exercising and listening to music and kind of zoning out a little bit, it suddenly came, the melody for the chorus came to me along with the idea that I would write it about my mum, because my stepdad passed away about 4 years ago, and I happened to be on tour in Ireland when it happened. He had been given a certain length of time with a terrible cancer, and we thought he had at least 6 more months when I was there, and he went down very rapidly. And, you know, who knows what the powers that be were that made it work out that I was with my mum at the time she probably needed me the most. But after it happened, we had this bond, the two of us, because I was there. And so she would call me up constantly over the months and years afterwards saying, you know, what did I do that night? Did I hold his hand? You know, did I say nice things? And she couldn't remember. And luckily she had me, who could say, no, Mum, you did everything exactly as you would want to and he would have wanted to. And, you know, and then she would, you know, tell me how hard it was to go on and what was she going to do. So I literally wrote that song based around quotes from my mum as she struggled with the guilt of, is she allowed to move on now? You know, and it's one of those songs I'm really proud of, and I love the melody that I came up with on that, because I feel like it captures this kind of the sorrow of it, but yet the message is, it's okay to go on. You know, you're supposed to go on. They want you to go on. They want you to be happy. And in the case of my mom, it was traveling, because they had traveled a lot in their retirement, and she then finally got the strength up. And since I wrote that song, she's been in Russia. You know, she lives in Dublin. She's 77 years old. She's been in Russia. She's going to Singapore next week. She's been out to America twice a year to visit us. And, you know, the song seems to have hit a lot of people. And I think I have somebody come up to me every gig, usually in tears, but hopefully happy tears, where they say that this really spoke to them about the loss of a loved one. And it's mostly because it's real words. You know, I almost felt like I was writing an article on losing somebody based on an interview with my mom. So I didn't have to, like, create a fake scenario to write the song. I was able to actually draw from a real situation, and I think that's why it resonates with people. So I'm just glad that I didn't mess it up, you know.
Just rain. She looked out the window for days. Just rain. So everything out there can change.
What a wonderful tribute to your stepdad. Wow.
Yeah, and he would definitely laugh about it, because we definitely had a checkered relationship. So I think nobody would be more surprised than he that I ended up writing a song about that, and it became, you know, one of our favorite songs on the new record.
As we wrap up here, I didn't want to do this interview without mentioning You and Me. I think a lot of people are going to choose this as a wedding first dance.
Yeah, and that's one of the weirdest moments of the whole album, because Chaz, our fiddle player, wrote that whole song. And he wrote it, he started writing it way early on in the process, and it took him the full year to finish it. And, you know, he would obviously speak about the song from a deeper way, you know, where he got it from. But I've asked him enough times, and it's kind of about a girlfriend and his daughter. It's kind of a blend of his relationship with those two women. And his daughter's a beautiful, beautiful girl, lives in Kansas City and has been on stage with us many times. And they sort of lost each other for a number of years and then refound each other. And it's a great, when you see it from that point of view, you really get to understand a lot of the lyrics. But as he said himself, it also came a lot from his love of his girlfriend. So it's a very deep song, and it's just, you know, I had my doubts as to whether I should do it, because it's, you know, obviously everybody is going to imagine it's about me and my loved one, but it isn't. And so it's kind of an unusual thing to have to answer questions on now. And a lot of people bring it up in interviews, and I have to say, and not really, can't really talk to that one because it's not about me. But it is a great love song, and I remember getting up in the morning on my way, we were flying somewhere, and I set up a vocal booth in my own house because I couldn't keep going down to L.A. to record, because it meant I was never home if I come off the road and go right down there. So I remember Chad sent me the final lyrics, and I said, okay, I'm going to give this a bash now over the next coming days. And I tried to record it a few times, and it didn't sound as good as I liked, and the very high notes, I wasn't hitting them as well as I wanted to, and I was struggling with it. And then this one morning, I got up at like 5 a.m., came into my studio, turned on all my mics, and turned on the recording, my Pro Tools, and I just went for it. I sang the whole thing. I didn't have time to listen back because I was catching a plane. I threw it all, you know, down, saved it, jumped on the plane, went and did a couple of shows, came back, and I played it back, and I just went, whoa, I think I got it.
It's a long way home, I always say. So how could anyone know that she would appear with a look so dear to me? Walking through those open doors, you're all I see. More than enough to anyone for this to be. And her eyes were almost shining.
What did the experience of producing Nine teach you that you've considered most important as an artist and as a businessman?
Well, first of all, the good news is I would definitely do this again with the self-finance to our fans and everything else. It gave us great freedom. It gave us great, that's really was the only difference, because we used the same publicist and we're using all the same crew and everything that we always did. And we're using our same producer and, you know, everybody on the project is who we always, the only difference is there's no label kind of dictating other parts of it. I'm really glad that we made an album we're proud of, even though we didn't have a label telling us that's not good enough or there's no single here or you need to write more songs, because we already do that to ourselves. We've learned that along the way, to be self-critical, and we've got a producer who's very musical, who has a lot of input as well, with Timmy Boland. From a business point of view, right now it's unbelievable. We've got thousands of copies. It costs us way less than it would have. We can actually make some money on the albums themselves now, and we're just really enjoying the whole thing. So, you know, I'm not saying it's for everybody. I think before you establish yourself, you may need the help of other organizations, but we have such an amazing, supportive, and large fan base that for us this was the absolute great way to do it. And I'm already excited now. I want to do a volume two to our Irish album, because there's so many great Irish songs that we weren't able to put on the first one, and it's so much less pressure to do that because you're not writing an album. So now I really want to do that next and do it this way again, because you're basically saying to your fans, if you believe we've delivered in the past, would you take a risk and buy the record in advance so that we can use your money to do it and then not owe the record company a huge amount of money afterwards, not really owe anybody anything, and own our own album outright? And it's a huge gift to give a band, because now we're having our songs placed in movies and TV shows, and we don't have to ask anybody's permission. And we've already got great interest in Nine for a lot of the songs. So overall, as a business decision, it was probably the best one we've ever made. It was a great learning experience, and I would do it again.
Keith, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Dot.